From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in the Richmond District, San Francisco.
Ingleside, San Francisco.
East Oakland.
Coming up, we'll visit a program that helps formerly incarcerated people find their footing.
And so that it's not just about getting a job and keeping it for 30 days. It's really about stabilizing your entire life.
Then a local journalist trains women around the world to report their own stories.
I didn't want to be part of mass machine that was disseminating the developing world information, war, poverty, disaster, disease.
And we'll hear from a local author about a book that's inspired her.
Finding ways to love our bodies and express our sexuality, which can be complicated if you're queer and trans and also disabled.
We hope you'll love today's show. Cross Currents is next. We'll start with the next installment of our series on public safety in the Bay Area, a project by the students in our journalism training program, the KALW Audio Academy.
What does public safety mean to you?
The city is not prepared unless everyone in the city is prepared for disaster.
So, do you owe a person sex if you've been flirting with them?
No!
It's really about stabilizing your entire life.
More than 60% of the people released from California prisons end up behind bars again within a mere 3 years after they get out. It can be hard to re-enter society, and it can be especially hard to find a job. Many employers refuse to even consider hiring someone who's been convicted of a felony. One organization in Oakland has a new way of putting these people back to work. KALW's Tammy Drummond has the story.
When I was 11 years old, I sold my first crack rock, you know, because times was hard back then.
Jesse James King grew up in West Oakland in the 1990s. Some of his older relatives sold drugs, but even so, they didn't want him following in their footsteps. He stuck to the plan for a while.
I did good, you know, I got good grades, but after high school, it was like I was working dead-end jobs. So I resorted to something that I knew how to do.
It was the very thing his relatives had tried to protect him from. King got arrested a bunch of times for drug possession. But then, in 2006, he got caught with 15 ecstasy pills. The felony was a game changer. King spent 8 months in Santa Rita jail, and when he got out, his job prospects were worse than ever.
You don't know why you're getting denied the employment, you know, they're not letting you know. You know, sometimes it could be because of background.
King was struggling, working sporadic construction jobs. But then he was thrown a lifeline. He joined the Emancipators, a program that helps formerly incarcerated people get a clean start by teaching them how to make soap.
Who would have ever thought you'd see brothers making soap, you know?
But the brothers are, in fact, making soap at the appropriately named Clean 360 factory in North Oakland. Thousands upon thousands of bars with exotic names like Lovely and Lace, Citrus Exfoliation, and Lemon Explosion. The factory is located in the back of a small one-story storefront at 41st and Broadway in Temescal. It looks like a restaurant kitchen with lots of large steel pots and pans hanging on hooks. Bottles of fragrance oils line the shelves, and giant blocks of soap called loaves are piled in stacks, waiting to be cut down into bars. A mixture of melted oils fills a giant pot. Damian Bradley, one of the Emancipators, explains the next step, mixing lye and fragrance into the oils to turn it into something you and I can bathe with.
So we're just, you know, just adding air to it, you know. Just kind of bringing the temperature down quicker.
Bradley and three other men are standing around the steel pot. One wears protective goggles and gloves. Between the super hot oils and the lye, they have to be mighty careful they don't get burned.
Facing up now, sticking it up, so we need to pour it real fast. If the longer we sit, if it sits any longer, it'll clump up and we wouldn't want to pour it.
Nearby, Charnay Bell, the lone woman in the program, is using a blow dryer to shrink cellophane wrap over gift baskets, stuffed with soaps and loofahs.
We're still trying to figure out how to perfect it, but if you hold it on too long,
It's gonna heat, it's gonna cause a hole. So it's a tedious process.
But Belle isn't complaining. She says the emancipators gave her a chance when no one else would. She got in a bad fight in college in 2013 and got sentenced to 120 days in jail for assault.
I have over 150 applications that I applied for jobs after getting convicted of that misdemeanor, and I didn't get one call back for an interview.
It's a small crew here at the factory, just six people. They're all African American, and they're all hoping that graduating from this program will help them transform their lives. Jesse King, who once sold ecstasy, graduated in 2014, but he still drops in at the factory once or twice a week to inspire the new recruits.
This is the mother. This is like the home base of everything. As long as you show up to work and do what you're supposed to do, there's no telling where you end up at.
King says the name of the soap, Clean 360, has two meanings for him.
Because what the soap do to your body and what it did to us. Most of the time, you get young African-American brothers that they'll start doing something good, and they don't go all the way through with it. You know, it's a half turn, and then they back going backwards, you know. But here, I mean, you know, we learned how to keep going.
And so that it's not just about getting a job and keeping it for 30 days. It's really about stabilizing your entire life.
Noha Abolata is CEO of Roots Community Health Center, the nonprofit that runs the Emancipators Program and the Soap Factory. Alameda County funded the pilot project in 2013. That funding has since run out, but Abolata says the goal was always to create a social enterprise that would eventually be able to support itself.
And so then we just start thinking about, so what does everyone need and what do we want? What do we want to make? And actually what it came down to was toilet paper and soap. And so I wasn't crazy about the idea of toilet paper.
Somehow, I don't think making TP would have given people quite the same sense of pride as producing all-natural soaps. The Emancipators trains formerly incarcerated people for factory jobs, but that's not all.
The way that we approach it is everything from getting enrolled in any benefits that you are eligible for, getting counseling if that's what you need, reunifying with your family, getting your driver's license, getting all your legal affairs in order. And so it's really a 360-degree approach to overall stabilization that we are noticing is really leading to long-term employment.
Graduate Jesse King's factory job as an emancipator has led him unexpectedly into the health field. He's now working for Roots Community Health Center at its clinic in East Oakland.
I am a health navigator / a community health worker. This is yours.
Okay.
Signed you up for emergency food stamps.
Yes, thank you
so
much.
So normally it takes 7 to 10 business days. But with emergency, you get them within 3 days. You'll get a phone call within 3 days, do your interview.
King now works with people who are in the same boat he once was in. He helps formerly incarcerated men and women get signed up for public benefits and get medical care.
Once we link them in with their resources and we see that they're doing good and they're working, then, you know, they grow wings and it's time for them to fly away.
King hasn't left the nest for good yet, but he's definitely taken flight. He's now enrolled in a community health worker certificate program at City College in San Francisco. And later this year, he and his longtime partner, who have 3 children together, plan to get married. Thanks to soap making, he's well on his way to making a clean 360. In Oakland, this is Tammy Drummond for Cross Currents.
Tammy Drummond is a student reporter in KALW's Audio Academy. Would you like to be a part of it? We're accepting applications now through Thursday night. Go to KALW.org for all the details. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Just like one health center is helping the formerly incarcerated take control of their lives, reporter Christy Hagrains is teaching women around the world to take control of their stories. Hagrains was an international correspondent for The Village Voice when she had a realization. As a foreigner, she wasn't always getting the full story. So she thought if locals could do the reporting instead, it would probably be more nuanced. That's when Hagrains started the Global Press Institute, a nonprofit that trains women around the world as journalists and then employs them to report on their own communities for the Global Press Journal. 10 years later, the operation now employs 126 women in 29 countries from Asia, Africa, and Latin America. Christy Hagrains joined me in studio, and I asked her to talk about the beginnings of the Global Press Institute.
I got my dream job, and it turned out to be anything but. Ever since I was a little girl, I wanted to be a journalist, in particular an international journalist, a foreign correspondent. It was my dream to travel the world telling stories. And when I finally got that break, I was in my early 20s, and I got an assignment to be a stringer and to cover the civil war in Nepal. And it was everything I ever wanted to do. But it didn't take long after being in country where I realized that my dream job was sort of anything but. The access that I had to real people was extremely limited. We were working through government-employed translators, and so the authenticity of the information was really compromised, and I just didn't have the context. You know, I had the training, and I had the employment working for credible publications, but I didn't have the social, historical, cultural, linguistic context that actually enables a reporter to make her stories true in the most accurate way possible. And I didn't want to be part of sort of mass machine that was disseminating the classic developing world information, the war, poverty, disaster, disease.
When did you realize that that was missing? Because, like, did that take time for you to realize? Was there an event or something that made you realize that I could be telling this story very differently or in a deeper way than we have been?
So while I was in Nepal, I had a pretty extraordinary experience where I met a woman named Pratima, who was sort of the matriarch of her village. And in spending just a couple of days with her, I realized that she had everything that I didn't. And rather than trying to teach myself how to speak Nepali and everything about, you know, the political landscape and the culture and everything, it would be so much easier to transfer the two basic things I had, the journalism training and the credible global platform, to someone like Pratima.
What did she have that you didn't have?
She had the trust of her local community. She understood the depths of the realities that they were facing. She had access to sources and story ideas that I didn't even know existed and wouldn't even know how to find. And she was a natural storyteller.
And so what happened then between you and her? Did you ask her to help you then?
I did. I had sort of a frustrating interview with her when I was actually trying to write a profile about her. She was a very amazing woman. And what in retrospect was sort of my lightning bulb aha moment, in the middle of the interview, I gave her my notebook and my pen, and I just said, you do it. You tell me what it is to be, you know, a person in this place at this time where, you know, all of your children are being forcibly recruited to join the war and your husbands are going abroad for work and HIV/AIDS is sort of ravaging your community. There are no schools. You tell me what I need to know. And she took a couple of days to do it, but what she handed back to me was absolutely a piece of journalism. And it was in that moment that I knew that there was a different way that stories could be disseminated from places like Nepal.
What did it include that you would have not known to include?
Details of what was going on there. For example, she detailed to me something that the local women in the village were calling love's disease, where all these women's husbands were going abroad to work in India. And they would come back to visit occasionally. And within months of the husbands coming back, the wives would get really sick. And they were calling it love's disease, when in reality, majority of the women in this village were HIV positive. stories like that that I never would have had access to as an outsider. People wouldn't have given me that interview, even if I knew the right questions to ask, which I didn't. She had so many details about how long it took to walk to the nearest health post and just details about life there that I'd never knew. But also, people would talk to her and people trusted her in a way that when you come into a community as an outsider, you know, with a white face and a big camera, you're not going to get authentic information. It's just a human reality. So not only did she know the stories and the questions to ask, she had the means to ask them in a way that yielded really authentic answers.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba, and I'm speaking with Christy Higraines of the Global Press Institute. And so what have been then some of the challenges that you've been facing?
I'd say one of
on the ground there.
One of the largest challenges is the number of applicants that we get.
That's a good challenge to have.
It is. It's a kind of a heartbreaking one. Recently, when we opened in Congo, we had more than 900 applicants for 5 training spots, which is just brutal. So that's definitely one challenge. And then just really the act of teaching ethical investigative journalism in places where the culture doesn't support that or understand that. Our journalists really have to ethically pave the way, explaining to their sources, here's why I'm not going to pay you. I know that everybody else would pay you for this interview. I'm not going to, and here's why.
But what about being women?
That is...
has that been difficult?
Absolutely, both in terms of the kinds of stories that they can safely tell, as well as, you know, what it means in their homes, their families, their communities, for women who, you know, may have had no prior experience to all of a sudden be a global journalist, published in 100 countries and being read by millions of people all around the world. One of the real, I think, for me, unexpected values of GPI has been this experiment of what does it mean for women in these communities to be employed in positions of literate leadership. So often when we talk about women's economic empowerment, it's, you know, the low-wage microloans or service professions. And this is a whole new reality. We now know that more than 80% of our reporters have become the primary breadwinners in their homes. And that certainly carries risks and challenges, but for the most part, it carries extraordinary opportunities. But I think, you know, when I think about the last 10 years, I really think about how fortunate I've been for how many extraordinary people have signed on to support Global Press Institute, whether it's our, you know, our funders or the amazing team here in the U.S. who does this work, but most of all, the women around the world. They hear a radio advertisement or they, you know, hear through the grapevine that this opportunity is coming to town and they show up in droves for this opportunity to tell a more real, more accurate story about their community to the world. And I just have such endless gratitude for the fact that they show up and they take this risk.
That was Christy Higraines, founder of the Global Press Institute, which celebrates its 10-year anniversary this year. To see reporting from the Global Press Journal, go to klw.org, click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. And now it's time for the book report, brought to you by the Litography Project.
Ah, the Litography Project!
Your guide to the literary Bay Area.
For the book report, we ask Bay Area writers to tell us about a book that's been meaningful to them. Today, we hear from San Francisco-based author Amy Berkowitz.
My name is Amy Berkowitz, and my book report is about Never Coming Home by Tyler Vile. Never Coming Home is a novel in verse. It tells the story of a character who's also named Tyler Vile, basically from her childhood to her adulthood. And it deals with a lot of the difficult issues that come up for her. First of all, she's disabled and has cerebral palsy and walks with crutches. On top of that, her parents both abuse her and are also pretty dysfunctional and fight all the time between themselves. And then on top of that, she also comes out as transgender. And so it is really dark. What is great, though, is that by being so honest and straightforward about all of this dark stuff, the book kind of earns the right to really celebrate the positive stuff that also happens to Tyler later in the book, in an equally genuine and straightforward way. But I mean, we are cheering for Tyler as we watch her find a community that she belongs to, the Baltimore punk scene, develop a deeper friendship with her sister, and start, you know, what we all do in terms of like finding ways to love our bodies and express our sexuality, which can be complicated if you're queer and trans and also disabled. I am trained as a poet. I have my MFA in poetry, and I also really dislike a lot of poetry because it just insists on being obtuse and just shuts so many readers out. But this poetry is more poetry in the sense of, okay, what can line breaks do for me? How can they add musicality? How can they make these words more performative and really reach people? And so I enjoyed her performances, but I was really blown away when I read the whole book and saw the whole arc of its narrative. The book is in four parts. Almost all of them are categorized. For example, there's sister, that's a category of poems. There's mother, that's a category. There's Crips, there's queers, there's body. So, this one is called Queers, Crips. I'm sorry the stairs don't have a handrail. I have a couch you can crash on, but the only bathroom's upstairs. Is that okay? I feel like a bad activist. I mean, a bad friend. I haven't hung out with many disabled people before. Is that the right term? Would you feel comfortable sharing my bed tonight? I can help you up the steps if you need. It's okay if not. I just want you to feel safe here. Isn't that sweet? I really would recommend it to anyone who's curious about reading it. I think it's really wonderful. And obviously the challenges this protagonist faces are very specific, but I think they're written in a way that makes them so relatable. And just the different themes of alienation and, you know, not feeling comfortable in your own skin and just experiencing a lot of tumult with your family are things that a lot of people can relate to.
And tell us about your favorite book. We'd love to hear about it. Email us at news@kalw.org or connect with us on Facebook or Twitter at KALW. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. And to listen to Cross Currents on the go, check out our new podcasts page. You can subscribe to other KALW shows like Your Call and The Specialist. Our team includes Geraldine Asu, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Tammy Drummond, Angela Johnston, Casey Miner, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by James Rollins. The line producer was Liz Mack. Our managing editor is Jan Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by San Francisco band Geographer. Geographer plays at the New Parish in Oakland on Thursday night. Doors open at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.